Hey everyone, and welcome to Catholic Bites. This is Father Conrad. I'm with Dr. Paige Hochschild, a professor in theology from Mount St. Mary's University. And today we are going to be talking about one of your favorite authors, one of your favorite spiritual works, which is St. Augustine and the Confessions. And what is it? What is it that we? Why are we talking about it? What I mean, everyone's read it or has been told to read it or whatever. Mm-hmm. Why are we talking about the Confessions?
Because it is a great spiritual classic, and it is one of the earliest truly human flesh and blood stories of how one man comes not only into the faith but into the church.
And when we read it, there's so many iconic moments. I'm sure a lot of our listeners have read different mm-hmm. sections, and we've talked, you know, beforehand about the episode where Augustine steals pears, his various mistresses and things like mm-hmm. that. Saint Monica crying all the time and crying just mm-hmm. enough that he converts and all this mm-hmm. other stuff, but. In particular, your favorite part of the book is not necessarily those narrative sections. Mm. It comes later on, mm-hmm. the part that everyone skips over at the end. So why is that?
Okay. So yeah, this is about why you should read to the end, especially the last four books. So when I was an undergraduate, we read books 1 through 9. This is very typical. Mm-hmm. And book 9 is mostly about Monica, his mother. And she dies, and he is weeping for her soul.
We should have said spoiler alert.
Sorry. Everyone dies. Just get over it. So she dies, and he's sort of praising her virtues, and then he sort of stops, and we call this an Augustinian moment. He says, when I come to think about it, she had her down. She had her bad moments too, and sometimes she had a little too much wine at night, and he sort of picks at a few little things like a bad son. But the literary purpose of that is to say, at the end of the day, we do not even know our souls completely, and we have to cast ourselves on the mercy of God, who alone knows us, and basically may God have mercy. So, and then he sets off into these last four books, which, as I said, very few people actually read. And I'm more interested in the last three books, but I have written a lot about the tenth book there, which has an extended treatment of memory and how we are related to God. And then it's followed by a treatment of the will and sin and mm-hmm. how we may have an access to God through our mind, through our memory, even through our youngest experiences. But at the end of the day, we have within ourselves, because of the reality of sin, the capacity to live in total contradiction of God. Mm-hmm. And you'll appreciate Father Conrad sort of when he gets, it's very, very much like Dante in a way, as you go down deeper and deeper into the pit of Inferno. But the end of book 10, he says, and here was my greatest dilemma, and it was the problem of praise and vainglory. Mm-hmm. And he says, here I am a priest, and every Sunday people come out and say, great sermon, Father. Mm-hmm. And he's like, awesome. And he takes this as a confirmation from the people of God that he has done his work. And then one Sunday comes and no one says a thing. Mm-hmm. And he has this existential crisis. And he asks himself, do I look for, do I need the praise of my people as a confirmation that I'm serving God, or is it really just somehow about me mm-hmm. in some way? Okay, this sounds really dark. You're an awesome preacher. I have no doubt about that. I know that for a fact. But anyway, he's sort of opening up the dilemma of sin. But the treatment on memory is also a really important setup, because what he's really interested in is, okay, he's entered the church. By this time, he's a priest. He's dealing with the reality of post-baptismal sin and what mm-hmm, I just described. Mm-hmm. But now he's looking a little bit more broadly, and he's saying, okay, what I've been called to do and the way to live within the world, given the reality of sin, is to fulfill the calling that we all have, which is to meditate on God's law day and night. And so the last three books are purportedly a kind of meditation on Genesis 1. But what they're really about is about the church and how living in the church is a way to begin to instantiate the life of embodied temporal beings in unity with God.
So a lot of people would say, the reason why the first 9 books are usually the ones assigned is because that's the narrative, that's the drama, the meat of his conversion, which is what mm-hmm. everyone wants to read. And then this would mm-hmm. seem to be a theological treatise just tacked on at the end.
Yes, yeah.
And yet it has unity. There's a reason why he wrote a lot of other theological treatises. He could have mm-hmm. done it in other places, but the Confessions was not just about, it's something deeply personal in which he's describing yeah. to the people around him, but then this theological treatise also must have something deeply personal yeah. about it. What's the unity between yes. those two portions?
Yeah. I think there's something too, saying, well, they feel kind of tacked on at the end, these three books, but when you spend time with them, you realize the first nine books are really a preparation for these last three books, which again are all about the church, mm-hmm. which is, how could God give us a way to live in time and space in the reality of sin, given the reality of sin? And that's, in a way, his meditation of Scripture is a way to articulate that. So I think the unity is, if you go back, some people have observed that if you look at books 1 through 9, there is a kind of, I don't know what you call this structure, like 1 has parallels with 9,
yeah,
so on and
yeah,
so
yeah.
forth. Whether that's true or not, there's something to the idea that 5 is really at the center, book mm-hmm. 5. Mm-hmm. And at that point, he's looking for unity, which again sounds really abstract, but let's face it, we're all looking for a kind of peace, a coherence, something mm-hmm. that just makes mm-hmm. a key that makes sense of our life, whether it's a relationship, a job. And he's like, okay, I'm hanging out with the Manichaean and this authority. He's no answers for me. Mm-hmm. My friendships are all messed up. So he's looking for love, and that's not working. He's looking for friendship, that's not working. He's looking for a true, reliable teacher. And he says, I just find myself dissipated in time, torn. He used a lot of distraction language, torn mm-hmm. in many directions. So looking ahead to the last three books, when I say they're about the church, I mean, so book 12, for example, is especially about the concept of heaven, or how could angelic or human beings be somehow embodied or temporal and actually enjoy the peace of God's eternity. And in a way, that's what he's looking for in book 5, is something like a taste within the life of the church of stability, mm-hmm. peace, true friendship. And of course, book 5 very beautifully ends with him meeting St. Ambrose, mm-hmm. his teacher. Mm-hmm. And he's like, this is it. This guy's got it. He's got the key for me. He has mm-hmm. friendship, love, and he can show me the way into meditating God's word. So that's just, I mean, I could talk a lot more, but that's just one way into seeing the unity between books 1 through 9 and the last few books, which are, again, about the church and how God, through the incarnation, has accomplished a true marriage between God's life and creation.
And that's, of course, I mean, the church is universal and the same from Augustine's time mm-hmm. to today. And this concept that the church is the place in which we, as fallen, limited beings, can encounter mm-hmm. someone so transcendent and life-changing and powerful, is something that we all can experience still today.
Absolutely,
this,
yeah.
This is so relevant
yep.
to us.
Yes, yeah.
Do you have a particular translation or place to go for Augustine? I know there's so many different
versions. I know. Everyone
versions.
Has a favorite. I mean, the first time I read it, we read the good old Loeb, super old-fashioned Watts translation, and I like that because the Latin's there. My dissertation advisor used Chadwick.
Yeah, I've...
And that's usually what I use mm-hmm. in classes as well. So
he's pretty accessible language-wise.
He's accessible, yeah. Yeah. I find his footnotes really annoying because he makes Augustine seem like more of a pagan philosopher than he really is for the first 8 books. Like, he's always struggling with Plotinus, but Chadwick is reliable. Anyone that you recommend?
No, those are the two, actually, versions that I've read myself. So
yeah.
I started with the very, very... old mm-hmm. school these and thys, and mm-hmm. it was actually difficult for me to enter into, and then once mm-hmm. I got Chadwick, it was a little bit easier.
Yes.
Translate, and that was the one that was assigned to me in yeah. the university too, is Chadwick. But
yeah,
it's surprisingly accessible. I mean, for
it
someone
is.
Who you know
yeah.
If you're going to read Augustine, you know, start with Confessions is
yeah.
usually the recommendation, because it's very personal and beautiful and powerful, and
yeah.
people have had incredible conversions themselves
yes.
from reading Augustine.
But it is, again, I mean, my reason I'm advocating for reading the last three books, abstract as they are, is that it's not just about Augustine and his mom, or Augustine and his girlfriend, and then Augustine and the text of the Bible. By the end of book 10, you know, he thinks, I am such a sinner, I'm just going to run off like St. Anthony. You remember, he's mm-hmm. going to run to the desert and hide in a cave, and I'm going to do battle with my sins. And That's the one, the moment where God really speaks to me, says, my son, honey, if you can't be holy in the church, you cannot be holy in the cave. So go back to the church and figure it out. And I think that's why your last point is a really nice one, that the church is where God has said he will work all of his plans out. So,
and so my temptation to go run off into a cave is also probably,
that's right,
ill-founded.
That's great. Right. Likewise, yes. Go back to your family, go back to your parish, and
be holy.
That's the place of holiness, absolutely. Because God has done it. Thanks be to God, he says, that he's given us the victory through Jesus Christ.
St. Augustine is called the doctor of grace, too. You know, this understanding that really it is that God will work in our hearts and transform us and make us new. Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Well, thank you so much. This is a enlightening. I hope everyone will now go out and read the part of Augustine's confession that they didn't read when they were in college, and get a little bit more depth and insight into him. It's a beautiful thing. Thank you so much for joining
us.
You're
very welcome.
And if you would like to learn more about St. Augustine, we have tons of talks about St. Augustine on our website, CatholicBitesPodcast.com. All our back versions of Catholic Bites, you can learn about him, about his theology. You can also find us on iTunes. You can subscribe there, or you can leave us a review. Thank you for joining us, and God bless.